Okay, we're starting here at the top of Mem Zayin Amud Aleph. We're continuing. The Gemara wants to try to determine whether the answer to the question of whether Hespeda is Yikara Dechai or Yikara Deshachve is the eulogy for the benefit of those that are alive, I mean for the cover of those that are alive, or is it for the cover of Mace? So Tashma, Amar Lahem Altis Biduni Be'ayarot. Rebbe instructs his children when he's getting his last will and testament here in the Gemara at the end of Kesubos. He says, don't eulogize me in the, seems to be like the smaller cities. If the whole point of a eulogy is for the benefit of those that are alive and for the cover of those that are alive, why does it make a difference? Or why does it matter to Rebbe where they do eulogy? I mean, if it affects him, then fine, you can make a command about it. But why, if it's affecting his children, should he have any impact on it? Felt that it would be more kavod Yisrael, and it would be more kavod if they did it in the larger cities only, and not in the smaller cities. That way everybody could get together. And therefore he was thinking in terms of the benefit of those that were alive, not just those that had, or himself, who had passed away. Tashma, this is from our Mishnah, it says, Alinu lechvodo, if they allow the body to stay overnight, meaning that there's a lota say to leave a body overnight. On the other hand, if it's done for the benefit of the mace itself, then we say that's okay. So that's what he said here. Alinu lechvado lavilo aron betachrichim inu arver alav. If we keep the mace overnight, in order for his own benefit, in order to bring him an aron or tachrichim, for those things that are the benefit of the mate, so my lav lechvado shel mate, it sounds like the reason that we're leaving the mate over is because it's kavod mate. He will have an aron or tachrichim, so to his benefit. Since it's to his benefit, we say don't worry about being melin at the mace. The Gemara says no, lechvado shel chai. That's for the kavod of those that are alive. For those that are alive, you want to give them kavod, you leave them overnight, you're going to let them stay overnight, the mace? The Gemara says, in. That's exactly right. The restriction against leaving the body overnight is similar to what we have the locha in the Torah, that one may not leave the body hanging overnight on the tree. It has to be similar to violate the lav, it has to be similar to what happens in the Torah, or the Isur Deoraisa of leaving the mace hanging. That's only in a case where there is bizayon. But here, since there's no bizayon, it's not a problem to leave the mate overnight, assuming there's no bizayon, in order to take care of the aron tachrichim, which will be to the benefit of the chayim. Tashma. Alinu lichvodo. Right, so they left him overnight for his own benefit, for his kavod. Lishmoa alav ayaro, to make announcements or gather people in the cities to come and pay respects to the individual. Lavilo mikonono, to bring the wailers to come to the funeral. Lavilo aron v'tachrichim, to bring him an aron or tachrichim. Inu averlav, you not violate the iser shekolose, inu elich vado shel meit. That all that you're doing is for the kavod of the mate. So here it's spelled out explicitly in this braiso, that it's all for the kavod of the mate. So if it's for the kavod of the mate, right, that will answer our question, whether all that's done for the mate is for the kavod of the mate or the kavod of chayim. Achikamar, kolosu lechvodo shochai, ain't be bizayon the mate. No. The way the braiso is establishing it or stating it is that anything that is done for the kavod of chayim is not classified as a bizayon the mate. And that is not a bizayon the mate, has to be something that is pogeya in the kvod ha-meis, right? In a way that is not benefiting anybody else. I mean, there is no purpose to what you're doing, and there's no benefit to anybody who's alive. But over here, since these are to the benefits of those that are alive, that is not classified as bizayon ha-meit, and therefore you could leave them overnight. Again, we leave the question unresolved until this point. This does remind me of what we said yesterday, that this reminds me of the machlokas between Rashi and Tosfot and the Gemara and Brachot, about whether an onin being potter min a mitzvot, according to Rashi, seems to be because of that the chayim, those that are alive, means that they should not be emotionally able to do the mitzvot, and then therefore they have an option to do them or not do them, whereas Tosfos believes that the onin is potter min a mitzvot for kvod ha-meit. We want to free up the individual so that all he focuses on, or so all of his dat is on the mace, and therefore he doesn't have a right to do the mitzvot, because that would be mesiach dat from the needs of the mate. So it sounds similar to what the Gemara is describing over here. Tashma, we're not doing siman yofa the mate, and if Rami Menuhenud achar mita. So a good siman for the mate, if when they take retribution from him after his death, meaning that he gets kapara from what that happens to him after his death. Again, he doesn't personally experience it, he's not alive anymore, but the kapara that he gets at those times, or those bizayon that's done to the mate at that time, will act as a kapara and bring him the olam haba. What is that? Mate shlo nisbad v'lo nikbar. Case where a mate was not eulogized, v'lo nikbar, he was not buried. So over here, Tosfos qualified, we mentioned this yesterday, Tosfos says it can't really mean that Lo Nikbar, he wasn't buried at all, but rather Lo Nikbar must mean that he wasn't buried with Fikvodo, I mean, we have to insist. The point is that he has to be buried. The question was, he buried for Yichovodo or not buried for Yichovodo? We're not assuming here that he's not buried at all. Because if we think that it's a kapara not to be buried at all, then the Gemara yesterday shouldn't have had the question about when a person says, don't bury me. Everybody wants to know if it's because of bizayon of the chayim, or that's to do with kaparat amet. Well, if you think that it's bad to be not buried, then the best situation would be not to leave him out, and he'll get a kapara. Gemara assumes that if he's left out, it has nothing to do with a kapara anymore. If he's not buried, then there is no kapara. So Tosa says we have to assume that he's buried, but he's buried lo gefi kvodo. If an animal is dragging him around, it's raining when he's having his funeral. All of these things are positive signs for the mate, because they come to be a kapara for the mate. Shmamino. So now we do have a conclusion. And this is for the benefit. This is for the benefit of the mate team, because clearly here you see that all these items, when we're talking about this, is for the kaparata mate. And therefore we're focused on the mate, and the everything seems to revolve around the mate, especially here we see the eulogy. That if he's not eulogized, that's a kapara mate. So it must be that the eulogy has not to do with the chayim, but rather to do with the mateim. Right now the Mishnah continues, we're continuing to dash the Mishnah. It says, Loya kubrinoto, that when after he's put to death or executed by Beis Din, he's not buried b'kivri avutav, he's buried in the special cemeteries of the Beis Din. Chokach loma. Why do we put him in the Beis Din cemeteries, not put him with his forefathers? Because that's a rule. We have a rule of thumb that you're not allowed to bury a Rasha next to a Tzaddik. Where do we know that from? Where do we know that a Rasha should not be buried until a Tzaddik? They were burying an individual. This is the Navi Sheker. The Navi Sheker who had guided Ido after Ido had spoken to Yeravam. And then he intercepts Ido and says to him, well, you know, I got a message from Hashem that you should stop by my house. Hashem had instructed this Navi not to stop anywhere, not to talk to anybody, not to eat by anybody. He violates the word of Hashem and goes to this Navi Sheker, and then he's killed because of that. He's eaten by a bear in his house. So they come to, later on, they come to bury this Navi Sheker who had misled the other Navi. So when they bury him, they see some sort of army legion coming or a marauders coming towards them. They just threw him into the catacombs that held Elisha, Bekever Elisha. But he got ish batzmot Elisha. And when they threw him in there, he ended up touching the bones of Elisha. He comes back to life and stands up. So he's mechaya, Elisha is mechaya meitim. So the Gemara's assumption here is that he got up because Elisha doesn't want a Rasha buried next to him. So Hashem is Michaye, the mate, after he touches the bones of Elisha, so that this mate will walk away and not be near Elisha. Maybe the reason that he brought him back to life has nothing to do with the Rasha and the Tzaddik not being buried next to each other, but rather to Mikhayim the Nivuah. The Torah says, V'ani pishnayim beruchacha elai. So he says too, it says that Elisha will get two times the Nevuah. He's granted two times the Nevuah, two times the power of Nevuah that his Rebbe Eliyahu had. So if he had two times the power, Eliyahu was Mechaya Meitim one time. Elisha was going to have to be Mechaya Meitim twice. So we know of the one incident where he's Mechaya Meitim is by the case of the Isha Shunamit, when our son passes away and he comes back and he brings him back to life. On the other hand, where's the second time that he brought somebody back to life? So this would be it. So it's not that he brought him back to life in order to remove the Rasha from the Tzaddik, rather he brought him back to life to be Mekayim the Nevuah, that he would be two times that of Eliyahu. So I'm like, if that's the case, I know the Tanya, Raglav Amad Luvetolo Alach. Right, it doesn't make any sense. Over here, we have a Bryce that extracts that he did get up, he was brought back to life, but then he did not walk home. He didn't go home, he just got up, moved over, and went back and fell back dead. If you're saying that Elisha has to have two times the Nevuah of Eliyahu when he brings two people to life, that's not called bringing someone to life. Wait, if that's the case, where do we find that Elisha brought anybody else back to life? And that we still have to figure out how to be Mekayim the Nevuah. So if you're saying this is not to be Mekayim the Nevuah, but rather simply to remove the Rasha from the burial of the Tzaddik, then where was the second time that Elisha was Mechayim Eitim? So the Gemara says, Amar Yochan Shripa Tzarat Naaman. When Naaman comes to him to have his Tzarat cured, Shehish Kula Kameit, because we know that a Tzarat or Metzorah is Chashuv for Meit. Therefore, when he cured him from the Tzarat, he brought him back to life. Tichtiv Anihit Kameit. When it talks about Miriam having Tzarat, it says that Aaron pleads with Moshe that she should not be like a dead person when she has Tzarat. So based on that, we say that he was Mechayim Eitim, not Mechayim Eitim Ayidei, really bringing him back to life, but rather Ayidei, the curing of the Tzarat of Naaman. And that's also what the incident with his Mishamesh Gechazi, who also ends up getting himself into trouble there and getting the tzarat of Naaman from that point onward. Right? Kashem. So not only is that restriction against bearing a rasha itzel tzaddik, but it also applies to the fact that you're not allowed to bury one type of rasha against a worst rasha, meaning that we have to have some sort of divisions. If that's the case, why don't we have four different sections in the Beis Din's kever? We actually have a section for those niskalim, a section for nisrafim, a section for the nechnakim, a section for the those that are nisayif, that those that are sentenced to death by Saif. How can we only have two areas? One that has Skila and Sreifa, and one that has Chenek and Saif. Shnei Kvarot, Gemara, Gemiri Law. That's Halacha Lemoshe Misinai, that we only have two sections. Two sections, one for the Nisrafim, Niskalim, and one for the Nechnakim, and those that are killed by Saif. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Achal Chelev, Vervish Karban. Person ate Chelev by Bishogeg, and now he has to bring a Korban Chatat, so he's mafrish the Korban Chatat in order to bring Ve'emir Dato, and then he leaves the faith. He becomes either Ovid Avodah Zarah, somehow he leaves the his religious beliefs, he's Kofer Beikar V'chazapo, but then later he does Tshuva. So ho v'nidche yidche. Since the Korban, at the time that he was a Mumar, he's not permitted to bring the Korban, we don't accept the Korban from a Mumar, therefore the Korban was Nidche. Nidche means that it reached a point, it was once able to be brought on Mizbech, then it's lost its ability to be brought on the Mizbech, is Nidche, and now it came back to being able to be brought on the Mizbech. In that case, Oyedche Nidche. Once it was pushed away, once it's no longer valid to bring on the Mizbech, right, then it is considered Nidche, and we can't bring it anymore onto the Mizbech. And that's based on the Gemara. Rashi tells us, a Korban Shemir, that don't aim a Kabbalin Korban mina Mumarim. We don't bring Korbanot when Mumarim, Ketanyu, Amaretz, Pratla Mumar. But now from Libud in the Gemara in Chulin, that says, Me'am Aretz, that comes to exclude a Mumar. So therefore we're not able to bring it, and we're going to say in the second excerpt, the Gemara says also, a Shoteh cannot bring a Korban, because a Shoteh is not a Bar Kapara, because you have to say, Yarkrivo told Lirtzon, no. He has to willingly bring the Korban, or he has to have some sort of sense that he's bringing the, or intent with bringing the Korban. And a Shoteh cannot have that will. So both of them are unable or incapable of bringing karbanot. So we're going to have exactly a case like this, which is Itam Rami in the Gemara. And then was mafish karban chatat, and then he lost his mind, and then he became of sound mind again. Since the karban reached a point in time where it was unable to be used, therefore we don't bring it anymore. But we need both of these cases. If you told me about the case of Mumar, he caused himself to be nidche, meaning that he made a choice. It was out of his free will, free choice, that he left the dot and became a mumar. But here, the shoteh, which is not in his hands, that was something that happened to him in a shamayim. Maybe he should not be invalidated, or his korban should not be invalidated. Maybe a geshen dami. It's as if he was sleeping. It's the equivalent to being asleep. Now, Tosus points out that he can't really be that, because even when someone's asleep, they're not possible to bring a korban, because they're going to, in the end, wake up. So I think that's what the Gemara is after here, meaning that it's true, just like someone is asleep, it's still valid to have his korbanot brought while he's asleep, because he eventually will wake up. We assume that he's going to wake up. So too, we assume by a shoteh, when he loses his mind, that we assume nishtafeh, that at the end he will have a sound mind. So we're going to assume in the end that he will gain his faculties back. Maybe he shouldn't be nifsa, the korban should not be nifsa. V'yashmin in hacha, if you only told me about the case of shoteh, b'shum de'em b'yadol achzor, and there it's not in his control. When you're a shoteh, you don't have the ability or the ability to change the situation or the circumstances. It's min hashamayim, whether they let you out or whether you are brought back to being a sound mind or not. So by a mumar, he has the ability to come back or do tshuva whenever he wants. So since it's within his control to do tshuva, therefore we say maybe he should be able to bring a korban. So I think maybe not. So tzrichas. Therefore we have both of them stated. We have the case of the shoteh stated, and we have the case of the mumar stated. That was in both those cases, they're nidche, and they no longer can bring the korban. Amar Rav Yosef, Anaf Anamana Mitanina, we also have a brace like this. Are you bok kochim, v'kochim izbeach yamutu? If this is going to be an irani dachat, if they find within the irani dachat where they have to kill all the people and then burn all the items or all the possessions of the city, so if they're in that city, they are kochim izbeach yamutu, they should be put to death. Kochim betech bait yipadu. Then if they are kochim betech bait, they should be redeemed. We ask the question, why should they be put to death? Why should the Kochei Mizbeach be put to death? Let's bring them as Karbanot. Meaning that they're Shlameim, Olot. Why can't they be brought as Karbanot or Karbanot Neva? Kevan de'ikto avilu kapara velisko l'gvoa. Once they are killed, they had a kapara. So once the people of Yerni Dachad are killed, then they are given kapara. Once they are given kapara, then we should be able to bring, it's as if they were chozer b'tshuva, we should be able to bring their karbanot on the mizbeach. So why don't we bring the karbanot? Why do we kill the karbanot or let them put to death the way Kodshim are put to death? Must be because at the point before they were put to death or sent or executed by Beis Din, they were mumarim. They were irani dachat. So there was a point in time they were irani dachat, and then only later were they chozer b'tshuva, or they had kapara from their death sentence, or from being executed. But in the interim, there was a point in time where they were nidchim. And the point is that once they were nidchim, they were nidche. So that matches up with what we're saying here, that once a person is unable or incapable of bringing a karban, once he's pushed away, that's it. We can't bring the karban back to being a valid korban. So Amalei Abaye says, wait, to Rav Yosef, Misarad, make mitoch lisho avilu kapara? Who says that your whole premise here is correct? Who says that just because they're sentenced or executed by Beis Din, that brings them any form of kapara? Mate mitoch lisho, lo avilu kapara. If he dies without doing any tshuva, if he's being killed by Beis Din or executed by Beis Din because he did something wrong, it doesn't mean they automatically get kapara. Detanya, Rav Shmaya, yachol afilu pirshu avutav mitarchei tzibur. Itama, it's talking about a Kohen is allowed to be mitame for the seven relatives. So here the Gemara qualifies that and says, that's only true if he follows the way of the tzibur. I mean that he's not a mumar, he doesn't leave, he's not poresh, mitarchei tzibur, he's not poresh from doing mitzvot. So that, yachol afilu pirshu avutav mitarchei tzibur, itama. You would think that a Kohen should be metameh for his seven relatives, even in an instance where their parents are not shomrei mitzvot, do not keep the Torah, are mumarim. That only when they do, right, that which is demanded of them, only do the mitzvot. If you believe that when somebody dies, there's automatic kapara, and that their reshut is dismissed, then the Kohen should have to be metameh for his seven relatives, no matter what. Because it shouldn't matter whatsoever. The seven relatives shouldn't matter whatsoever what their status was beforehand. Now that they've died, they have kapara, and they should be able to be brought. But the fact is that that's not the case. We say that there is a differentiation. If that's the case, then it means that not automatically when someone is dying, mitoch risho, do they get kapara? Some layer of mika medamit. Your parallel is not a good parallel over here. Why? How can you be parallel nerag mitoch risho, the mate mitoch risho? There's one thing, if a person dies a natural death, and they do no tshuva, versus being executed by Beis Din, shelo biito. A person who dies a natural death, you can't say that his death is a kapara for his sins, because his death was not an untimely death, it wasn't something that is acting like a kapara. On the other hand, the case of Beis Din, where they're executing the individual, the fact that Beis Din is shortening his life and executing and putting him to death, that should be a kapara. Can't compare the two cases. The case where the Kohen is a case where they died naturally. Case over here, or in our case, in the Mishnah, is a case where they're being put to death. When they're being put to death, that's a different story. Maybe there would be kapara. So, mate, mitoch risho, kevin dechi orche kamayit, when he dies a natural death, and since that's a natural way to be, lo avi lo kapara, that doesn't act as a kapara. And nerag mitoch risho, someone who's executed or killed because of their reshut, kevin dechi orche kamayit, mate, he doesn't die the normal death or a natural death that people do, avi lo kapara, then it would be a kapara. Teda, I can prove that to you. Dichtiv, mizmor le'asaf, elukim bo goyim b'nachalatecha, tim'u et heichol kodshecha, nu et nivlat avadecha ma'achal li'of ha'shamayim, basar chasidecha l'chaito aretz. So, my avadecha, my chasidecha. What's the difference between avadim and chasidim? So, love chasidecha, chasidecha mamash. Chasidecha are those people that follow your ways and keep the Torah. They're really those tzaddikim. And then, what are the avadecha? Avadecha are hainu de mechai veidina, de mi'ikara. That these are avadecha, people who were chayav mita Beis Din or chayav misa for some reason, they did something wrong, and therefore Hashem had to take retribution on them. But once that retribution, or once that punishment or their execution has taken place, then they were called avadecha. They're avadecha now. Beforehand they weren't avadecha, but when they're put to death, they're considered avadecha. So Rava creates this differentiation between dying a natural death, which will not be a kapara, mitoch risho, but it's being executed, which will be a kapara for him. So I'm like, Abaye says, I don't like that distinction. That distinction is not so, certain. Because I'm like, Abaye, Mika, Madamit. How can you compare them a case? Haruge Malchut, La Haruge Beis Din. You're comparing people who are killed by the Malchut, killed by the kingdom, probably here referring to the Romans, versus Haruge Beis Din. Haruge Malchut, Kevin Shalobadin, Kamikatle, Avalu Kapara. The case by the Aruge Malchus, we quoted the case of Mizmat Lasaf, Elokim Ba'u Goyim Benachalatecha, they're coming to Nachala, and therefore they're putting to death the Hasidim and the Avadim, over there, where they're killing Shalokidin, they're killing, right, not appropriately, they didn't over there adjudicate or bring them to trial, and they were going to put them to death for reason, for cause, no, they just kill anybody in their way. So that type of killing, true, that can be a kapara, because that killing is done in an inappropriate way, unnecessary, and therefore it'll act as a kapara. On the other hand, when we're talking about Uge Beis Din, we're talking about Beis Din putting somebody to death, there, that won't be a kapara, because they're doing what is just and right. They adjudicated a case, they brought the person to trial, and now they're punishing him, and that's what they're doing. What they're doing is just and right, and therefore it should not be act as a kapara. Since they were killed inappropriately, therefore it acts as a kapara. Then when it comes to Beis Din, right, those that are killed or executed by Beis Din, since they are doing it rightfully, lo avilu kapara. Then I can prove it to you. That over here in our Mishnah, it says they don't bury him with his forefathers. If the killing of Beis Din automatically grants him kapara, right, then the execution by Beis Din, once he's been executed, they should be able to bury him with his forefathers. Because now he's a tzaddik. Now he has kapara. So why do we hold him out and say he has to be buried in the special kvarot to Beis Din? If you think that once he's put to death, he gets kapara, likavru. Right, then let him be buried with his forefathers. Kamen says, no, mita ukvura beinon. It's not enough to get kapara through just death. It's the death and the burial that create the kapara. As Rashi points out over here, the chivut hakarka. The chivut hakever, the chivut hakerva, that once that little chivut hakever happens, that's enough to grant you kapara, but you still need that. So moti ravada bravo, lo ayu mit ablim, ele onanim. That when it comes to the relatives of this individual, they're not allowed to be mit'abel, they're only allowed to be onanim. Onanim shebelev, meaning they're allowed to be saddened, they're allowed to grieve, but they're not allowed to have nehuya avelut, things that are public displays of that grievance, because that's an affront to the Beis Din and the Edim who came in and executed this individual. If you believe, once he's buried, he gets kapara, liablu, let them have avelus, meaning that if already, by the time he is put to death by the Beis Din, executed by the Beis Din, and then on top of that, he is buried, that is already grants him kapara. Once he has kapara, they should be able to be mitabal on him, because he's no longer a Rasha. They should be able to have avelos at that point in time. So when it says, banyan nami iku basar, it's not enough mita and kvura, but you need some of decomposition of the body in order for there to be kapara. Tekanami tiktonik, it says, nikata ala basar belaktim et atzmot. Only once the body is decomposed, we move the bones over to Kivri Avutav. We see from there that that's the case. Now, truthfully, when does Avelut start? Mistimata Golel. From the closing of the Golel. Now, Stimata Golel. Now, this is a Machlokas Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam throughout Shas about what exactly the Stimata Golel is. Golel is Rashi considered to be the daf or something that they place over the coffin on the top of the Aron, the ceiling of the Aron, the dofek of the two walls, and the piece on top is the Golel. Rabbeinu Tam says, no, that it was a large rock or stone that they used to put on top of the kever, that there was the dofek, two walls that held it up, and a large stone on top of it that used to hold it up, and that big stone to mark or be a matzeva for where the kever was. That's what the Golel is. I always thought, and I think that I've seen this in some of the Rishonim, that Stimata Golel is, if you see some of the catacombs in Israel today, that they're open, they're caves that you can enter into. And in order to prevent both the robbers and the animals from getting inside the caves once they had buried people in there, they used to have a big stone that was outside the, you can see this in Yerushalayim today, that's where I noticed it the first time, there's a large stone that they can wheel in front of the catacombs that one can enter. So they bring in, they wheel the stone in front of that doorway, and then there's a smaller stone that they place, they wedge underneath so the stone won't roll either way, in either direction, so that it wedges it in place and locks it in place. So the Golel is this big stone that they roll in front of the entrance to the catacombs, and the dofek are these other stones that stop it from rolling in either direction. That's what I would most think. I think Tosas mentions it in a couple places also. I think that would be the Golel, and the dofek, it makes the most sense. That Stimata Golel, closing up the Golel, means closing up the cave. And that's when the Avelut begins. So, Kapara Meitai Kahavya, Ichazut Zara Dikivra Purta. So when does Kapara start? Kapara starts from the time that when they already saw some of the Tzar HaKever. So once they've seen part of the Tzar HaKever, that's when it begins. Hilkach Hovi Itchu Itchu. So this is why, by the Avelim, why they do not sit Avelut over here is because the Avelut cannot start right away. The aveilut can only start once the individual has kapara. The kapara takes some time to happen. You need some sort of beginning of ikula basar in the kever. But that point in time, the stimat agudel is already passed. The time for beginning aveilus has already begun. Since the time for aveilus has already begun, then we say, okay, hovi yitcho, yitcho, that once they've already been dismissed, meaning that they had an opportunity to, they had a chiyuv avelut, the time that they should have been chayv in avelut by stimat agoleo, they were not chayav, because the body hadn't decomposed at all yet. But then, only once the body decomposes, we're not gonna then say, oh, you're now chayv in avelut, the time to be chayv in avelut passed, that point in time you were patur, that means that you are patur legamrei. So that's the Gemara's answer about why they can't sit Avelut over here. Why can't they sit Avelut? Because the beginning of Avelut, the point when Avelut should start, is a time when they are a Patur, and then we don't make them Chayav later on, because once it's dismissed, it's dismissed. The similar Machlokas Avishonim by Avelim in general. When it comes to Avelim, for instance, by Havdalah, after Shabbos, if someone is an Onen, or coming after Shabbos, as a Mesa, is Niftar on Shabbos, comes to Havdalah, they might be Patur from Havdalah. Again, depending on whether you think Abdullah is part of Shabbos or not part of Shabbos, a question mark, or whether they are patur from Abdullah. But if they are patur from Abdullah, what happens when they make this buried and then they're going to be an Avel? Do they have to make Abdullah? We know that Abdullah can be made. If it's not made on Motzei Shabbos, it can be made on Sunday, it can be made Monday all the way through to Tuesday. So once he becomes an Avel, should he then make Abdullah? So many of the Rishonim believe no. Because since he was patur at the Zman that the Chiyuv was Chal, the time that the Chiyuv Abdullah Motzei Shabbos came in, he was patur. So therefore, later on, when he becomes Chayav, since he wasn't Chayav at the Iker Zman that the Chiyuv was Chal, there is no making it up. There's no Abdullah for the rest of the week. It's similar to what we're sitting and stressing over here. Just like over here by Avelus, since at the point that the Avelus should have been Chal, he's patur, that we don't say that Avelus all of a sudden kicks in afterwards when there's some sort of Chivut HaKarka. So Mara says, okay, Iochi, Lamali Iku Basar. Why do you have to wait this out? This is what we just discussed before. Why do you need Iku Basar? If just being in the kever for a short amount of time is enough to grant the individual kapara, why would we wait all the way for Iku Basar to move him over to the other grave? Shum Delefshar, again, it's an impractical issue. It's just impractical to move a body that's starting to decompose. You want to wait till everything is gone, and then you bring him over the bones. Okay, Kavrei the Rav, Avishaklim Rinei Afro, the Ishto Bat Yoma. It seems like to be that from the, wherever Rav was buried, or from the burial site, it was a catacomb where Rav was buried, they used to take some of the dirt from by that kever, and they used to use it as a cure for those individuals that had a one-day fever, some sort of illness that this was a cure for. So Adam Rulei, the Shmuel, they told Shmuel about this, they thought that was an affront or a pgia in the kever of Rav. How could they be taking the dirt from the kever of Rav as a, some sort of, medicinal purposes. I'm like, oh, yeah, Utavdina, it's fine what they're doing. Karkolom hu. Dirt is part of the face of the earth. Karkolom enu neseret. Something that's attached, dirt, that is attached to the ground, or earth, that is a part of the ground itself, is not something that you can make into Isur Hanoah, because it's attached to the ground, and by virtue of it being attached to the ground, it remains as an Isur Hanoah. Dichtiv, it says, Vayishlechet Afarel Kever Bnei Am. Right, so over there it says that they threw the afart onto the kever bnei am, mekish kever bnei am l'avodat kochavim. It connects the avodat kochavim over there to the kever bnei am, that he's going to throw the afar of all that was destroyed or burnt up of the avodah zarah. He's going to spread it or disperse it all over the kivot am. So there, the Gemara now says that there's a hekesh between avodah zarah and kevarot. Ma avodah kochavim mechubar lo mitasra, avodah kochavim that's attached to the ground, that is something that it was always attached and always mechubar, you can't make it aser b'avodah zarah. Tichtiv, asher atem yoshim otam. Here you come into the land and you inherit them et Eloheim el harim. Those, they're gods that are found on the mountains. They're avodah zarah that's found on the mountains. You must destroy. Harim harim. Al harim Eloheim. That's only true for the gods that are found on the mountains. Velo harim Eloheim. But they can't make the mountain into avodah zarah. You're not going to have to be oker the whole mountain because it's avodah zarah. They cannot make something that's mechubar the karka into avodah zarah. It's only if it's been detached, then does it take on a status of avodah zarah. So to over here, achanami mechubar lo mitaser. Anything that's attached to the ground or to the earth is still classified as being not isur hanah, and it's not part of the kever that you can't use it. Meitavei achutziv kever laviv. Someone who digs out a grave, someone quarries a grave for their father. Rashi claims over here that it's not particular to the father. It has to do with anybody. That's just most of the shchiach that they're talking about here. But he did it specifically for the mace. And Rashi points out here, and he's going to point it out later again, that this has happened only mishemes. I mean that when he is chotzev the kever for his father, this is after the individual had already passed away. So the mace is waiting, and then he digs out the kever. Aloch v'kaver makom acher, and then he decided, he opted to bury the mace somewhere else. Arizeloi kaver bo'olamit. He may not be buried there forever. Now you could argue that he can't be buried there. If it's aviv, you could be arguing because it's kibud aveim. But Rashi claims no, that it's not a problem of kibud aveim, it's a problem of isra anah. Since it was designated for a particular mace, and it was, that mace ended up being buried somewhere else, it became isra anah at that point in time. So now, that sounds like afar. You dug out quarried out a grave. And now you're talking about afar, and we're saying that's asur b'ano. So when it says, how come I skin a kever binyan? We're talking about a building that's a kever. We're not talking about a dug into the earth or the ground kever, but rather a building or some sort of stone structure that was the kever. That you can make asur b'ano, because that's detached. And even now, that's mechubar lekarka, something that was talush, lesof mechubar, you can make into avodah zarah. Just like by avodah zarah, you can do that, so too by a kever. If it was first detached, and then mechubar again, it can be made into isurei hano. Tashma, we have another case. Kever chadash mutar ba'ana. Someone who digs a new grave, not with any mace in particular in mind, but just digs a grave, then it's mutar ba'ana. Heitil bo nefil, if you place then any miscarried child into there, asur ba'ana, then it becomes asur ba'ana. Hachanami bekever binyan. Over there, we're also going to die. It's not like a grave that you dug into the ground, but rather talking about some sort of structure that you built. And that's why it's asur ba'ana. Tashma, imtzat omer shalosh kvarotain. Really, I mean, the way that the Rashi is, the header in Rashi is, and the way that probably should be written here, shlosha kvarot, it should be. Shlosha kvarotain. There are three different types of tombs or burials that you can have. Kever amnimtza. Kever yadua, kever mazikat rabim. Those are the three. Now we're going to explain each one of them. Kever nimtza. Case of kever nimtza is where they find someone buried in an individual's field. The person never granted permission to anybody else to be buried there. They see that they buried someone in the field, even though they were not granted permission. Then mutar lifnoto. The person's stealing from this person's field. They can pick him up and take him out of there. Tzipino, if they do remove him, then mekomo tahor. The place is tahor now that there's no tumatamate anymore. Umutar ba'ana. And he's also mutar ba'ana, meaning that you can get anah from the location. So, kever yadua. Same with kever where the person had permission to bury there, then asur lifnoto, you may not remove the mace over there. And pino makom tame. If they remove him from there, the place remains tame, vasur ba'ana, and it remains asur ba'ana. Kever amazika the rabbim, we find a kever that's causing problems, meaning that for tumat, that the rabbim have to pass over there, it's causing people to be tame. So then, mutalif noto, you can remove the mate, pino, but when you remove it, makomo tohor, the makom is now tohor, vasur ba'ana, it remains asur ba'ana, that area. So there, the Gemara says, well, you see all these cases here where we're talking about a mace, we're talking about things being asur ba'ana. So it sounds like I'm about all these different types of burials, and the burials affect whether it's an isur ba'ana or not. So the Gemara answers up, no, achanami bekever binyan. Also over here, we're talking about a case where it's a building. That's why it's asur ba'ana. We're not talking about kvarim that are dug into the ground, that are chutzev into the ground. So one thing to point out here, Rashi says, differentiates. There's two restrictions that come when a mace is buried. There's one restriction that it makes the area tamei. There's another fact that it makes the mate is to face the ground around it or the place around it, and it makes it asur ba'ana. The Gemara is now qualifying, and that's only true by a binyan, but not by mechuber lekarka. Rashi says, the fact that it makes it asur ba'ana, that is an isur doraisa. So therefore, we cannot waive the isur doraisa. On the other hand, the tum'ah that's surrounding the mate, that affects the area around it, makes it tameh, that's only something that is imposed midrabanan. We don't want people getting benefits. We don't want people entering the graves and coming near the kvarot of people. We want them to respect that area. So therefore, the chamim made the whole area tameh, so nobody would go near there. So in the case where it's kever nimtza, where the person was buried there without permission, it's stealing. So there, even the isur doraisa doesn't apply of hanah, because you can't be osur someone else's property. You can't make it osur ba'anah. And number two, the tumah doesn't apply. Chamim or not goes there tumah in someone's field when someone stole from their field. On the other hand, when it's a kever that was placed there with intent and the owner knew about it, in that case, you're not allowed to remove it. And if you do remove it, first of all, there's still an isur anah, mina torah, because they had permission to be there and you can make it osur ba'anah. And number two, the chamim impose the isur tumah. They don't let it release it. Even when you take the body out, they don't release it because of a knas. We don't want you moving the body. We don't want people entering kvarot. We don't want people moving bodies. Therefore, we make the whole area tamei. On the other hand, the last case where it's kever that mazik l'rabim causes problems for the general public, over there, because of the problem for the general public, we allow you to move the grave. But when you move the grave, the chamim can waive the tumah, because over there, the chamim say, listen, we're not going to be gozer tumah in that case to prevent people from moving it. We want them to move. We don't want them to cause more problems for other people. On the other hand, the isur d'oraisa of hanor will remain. So you can't get anah from that binyan or that kever because the mace was buried. It was buried there properly, and therefore there's an isur anah. Isur anah d'oraisa, they can't waive. So that's what the conclusion of the Tosefta is, that the isur d'oraisa will remain. On the other hand, the Yisur Rabbanon will be waived in that case. The Yisur Rabbanon of Tumah will be waived in that case. Gemara says, wait a minute. V'kever ha-nimtza mutar lifnoto. If it's a kever that's found in your field, they place the mate there without your permission, you can remove it. Duma mei mitzvah. Who says it was someone stealing? Maybe it was a mate mitzvah. We found the body there. And a mate mitzvah is kone mekomo. Mei mitzvah kone mekomo. You can bury him there. And he has the right. That's one of the tanaim that Yoshua is manchilat aretz. That when there's a body found in a place, you bury him on the spot. And there's no questions asked. Gemara says, shani mei mitzvah the kali itle. Had it been a mate mitzvah, been well known, people would have known about it, it would have been heard. The fact that we don't know anything about this mate mitzvah indicates that someone came in here, stole the property, and buried a mace there. So itmar, this brings us to another case, a case of what we call Tazmana Milsa. He is preparing something, make it asur b'anar or not. Itmar, oreg beged the mate, someone who makes tachrichim for a mate. Abaye amar asur, Abaye says that it automatically becomes isurei anah because it's being made for the mate. Rav amar mutar. Rabbi says it's mutar to use. Abaye amar asur azmano miltihi. Abaye says that by the mere preparation, the mere fact that you are preparing something, makes it into an isur hana'a. Rabbi amar mutar azmano la milti. The preparation is only exactly that, preparation. Until it's used for the mace, until it's specifically been engaged and put into use or service for the mate, then it's not asur b'hana. So my time to Abaye, what's the reason behind Abaye? Gamar sham egla rufa. He learns that exera shava from egla rufa, just like it says by Miriam. When Miriam dies, it says vatika ver sham, the tamacha Miriam vatika ver sham, she was buried there. And by the egla rufa, we also have sham is also used by egla rufa, and then we know my eglar ufab is mana mitas. So we saw from the Gemara in other places in Kedushin and in Kritut that once the animal is brought down to be do the tekes of eglar ufa, they automatically becomes asur. Even if they never go through the tekes and never finish the tekes, the animal is automatically asur b'ana. So the mirror bringing it down makes it asur b'ana. So just like over there, the azmana, the preparation makes it asur b'ana. So to here, by the beggar, the tachachim makes it asur b'ana. So ainami b'azmana mitasro. Rava gamar sham evorot chachavim. It says avdu sham hagoyim. So just like the sham by avodah zarah, so too is the sham here by the beged. Ma avodat chachavim bazman alo mitasra. When you prepare something, and Raz Rashi points out here that we're talking about takrovet avodah zarah, we're talking things that are brought, not avodah zarah itself, but things that you're going to use to worship avodah zarah, because that's the context of the pasuk. Asher asher avdu sham hagoyim is not literally the avodah zarah, but what they used for avodah zarah. So over there, just because you prepare something for Avodah Zarah, that does not make it into Avodah Zarah. It only has to be used. It has to actually be used in the service of Avodah Zarah in order to come to Asur B'anah. So they're just like, also, by the beggar, until it's put into service, it will not be Asur B'anah. Just preparing it is not enough. So Rashi points out, by Avodah Zarah, there's no such thing as Hektesh by Avodah Zarah. You can't be Maktish something to Avodah Zarah. You can't be makdish something to avodah zarah. You can't have this kind of hazmana. You can't indicate for it. Rava my time alo gamar me'egla rufa. So why does Rava not accept the bayis limud by egla rufa? Amalecha mishamshim mishamshim gamrinan. I'm going to learn out things that are in service from things that are in service. Meaning that takrovet avodah zarah, things that are used to service avodah zarah, and takrichim that are used to service the mate. Those two I will compare. I'm not going to include the case of egla rufa, which has nothing to do with servicing people. It's the animal itself that becomes asur b'anah. Lafuk egla rufa de iguf haktosha, that it itself is what becomes kadosh. Abaye, my time alone, gomer mevodat kochavim. And why does Abaye not learn out from avodat kochavim? Not learn out from avodat zarah. Amalecha midei de orche, midei de orche. Point out something that is natural or normal for something that's normal. Well, it's normal. The normal thing to do is to egla rufa, that you have to do the process of egla rufa. So that's a normal due process that's laid out for us with the Torah. Or midei de orche is someone who makes tachrichim for a mate. That's normal. Then in general, by avodat chachamim, it's not normal to prepare some things ahead of time. What does that mean that it's not normal? Because as Rashi points out, shederach hayudim lasot kein avodat zarah asura. The cases of egla rufa, the cases of tachrichim for the mate, that's things that Jews do. But when it comes to avodat zarah, even bnei Noach are restricted from worshipping avodat zarah. Therefore, lo mitasra tashmish didavana. Therefore, the preparation is not enough to make it asur b'anah, because we always assume that the person is not going to go through with the process of worshiping avodah zarah. Why will they not go through the process of worshiping avodah zarah? Because everybody's restricted from doing avodah zarah. So therefore, over here, Everybody will back out of it. They're underlying assumption is since everybody's restricted from washing Mat Azara, people are naturally going to back out of this. Since they're going to back out of it, we don't assume that it's automatically a Avodah Zarah, as opposed to Eglar Ufa. And in the case of Tachrin Mate, where the natural course would be use them, and there's no reason to assume they're going to back out there, Azmana is Milsahi. My brother-in-law mentioned to me that he thought that a Nitz Chakira and Azmala Milsahi or not, is when you do preparation, why is it classified, according to Abai, why was Hazmana classified as being actually done, or why is it classified as being that you are now Makdish, or making Lester Bana the item? So he suggested that there are two possibilities to look at Hazmana Milsahi. Either we look at Hazmana Milsahi, the fact that you've gotten so far through the process of preparation to the point where it's ready to be used, we look at it as if it's been done already. I mean, there's similar ideas that we have, kola omei the gavot, ki gavui dami, anything that's ready to be collected or is absolutely ready to be collected as if it is gavui. We have this concept in halacha that at certain times when you're so far along or it's so ready to be done, we consider it as if it's done. So that's over here, as mana milsa, since you're so long and far along in the process that it's ready to be used, we consider it as if it is used already. That's one possibility. The other possibility, why Hazmana Milsahi could be something similar to Nidrei Hekdesh, Nidrei Tzedakah by mitzvot. Anytime that we make a commitment to do a mitzvah, it's as if you've now made a statement or an indication that you're going to do a mitzvah with this item. Once you've dedicated or consecrated something to be for a mitzvah, that's what makes it Hazmana Milsahi. Just like if someone commits to give tzedakah, or someone is maktish something, that gives it kedusha, that cannot be removed, or it obligates the individual to give tzedakah. So it's over here, Hazmana Milsahi. A person is in the process of making something into a mitzvah, that's as if he was makdish it to be for the mitzvah, and therefore he can't back out of it. So that's two possibilities to view what Hazmana Milsahi is. Is look as if it has been completed, or to look at it as a commitment, and that commitment you're not allowed to back out from. Okay, we'll stop over here.